All right. So thank y'all very much for joining us today. Today I wanted to look at Psalm 18. One of the things that struck me about Psalm 18, just jumping off the bat, is the title. Says, to the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord delivered him from the hands of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. And he said, and it goes in and starts the psalm there in verse 1. If you just do a quick Google for Psalm 18, often the titles won't show up. And so sometimes we miss out on good information by not having the titles. You know, I've got a study Bible that's got that information above all the psalms. Not all psalms have a title. But this one, you know, probably one of the longer ones we've got, and it's got a lot of interesting information in there. And I guess most notably is that it speaks to a very specific day. And so David, if you remember his life, he's had a lot of enemies throughout the whole course of, you know, his life, from the time that he was pulled from the being a shepherd over his father's sheep, and, you know, his initial foray into battle was with, you know, Goliath. But before then, he had actually been serving in Saul's court as a musician. He was the harp player who would calm down Saul when he had bad fits. You know, he had an evil spirit that came upon him when because of his disobedience to God. And so David was brought in to play to him to calm him down. After David fought Goliath, you know, Saul didn't let him go home anymore. He stayed there in the court, and he wound up promoting him, you know, to be, you know, leader in the army and military. And he would go out and come in before the people, leading the armies. And the main thing that separated him and Saul was Saul got jealous when they were coming in, and the ladies of the town were celebrating and singing songs, and they were saying, you know, Saul has killed his thousands of enemies, and David has killed his 10,000s. And so from that point on, Saul looked at David with just real jealousy. He saw him as a challenge to his reign as a king, and that got worse and worse to the point where he started trying to kill him. Saul's son Jonathan was David's best friend. And Jonathan went out of his way, you know, often against his father to protect David and to try and warn him and to get him out of town. And so finally, when it just became clear that Saul, you know, meant to have him slain, you know, Jonathan told him, you've got to just leave. And so as David has to take up a life really on the run, he's a fugitive from Saul. He would bounce around to these various caves or places in the wilderness where he and then his group of men, there's men who started drawing to David over time, those who were in debt or those who had troubles or whatever. And so he kind of had this band of men. And you think from Saul's perspective, it was kind of like a group of outlaws, which to an extent it was. But they're following David around. And in the process, every time David Saul would hear where David was, they would go chase after him and try to find him to destroy him, to remove this, you know, threat to Saul's, you know, reign as king. And so why am I going through all this is because there was quite a few times that the Lord delivered David out of Saul's hand when he should have been trapped. So let's look over in 1 Samuel chapter 24. And I've just got verses 3-6 here up on the screen. Saul with his men are looking for David. David and his men have hidden themselves inside a particular cave. Saul goes in that cave, and the figure of speech that says is he goes in to cover his feet. Commentators argue a lot what exactly that means. Does that mean he's laying down with a blanket to cover his feet to rest? Or does that mean he's going into his bathroom? So, don't exactly know. But either way, he's in the cave, and it sounds like he went in by himself, and David and his men were in the sides of the cave. And his men are like, all right, this is the guy who's trying to kill you. The Lord's really, you know, he's blessed you. He said, behold, the day of the Lord, which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it seemed good unto thee. Then David arose, and rather than killing Saul, he just cut off a little bit of Saul's skirt privately. And it came to pass that he actually felt guilty about that. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So Saul, as the king of Israel, had been anointed by the prophet Samuel, and David knew that it was wrong for him to extend his hand and to kill him. And so he let Saul go that day. He left the sheepfold, and after he left, David, you know, came out and gave his presence away and told him, you know, that why are you coming after me? I'm nothing, just a dead dog. Says the Lord judge between me and thee, and see, and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. So this is what David is saying to Saul. He's asking the Lord to judge between Saul and David. David hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't been unfaithful to his master. And so he's asking the Lord to judge whether Saul's being righteous or whether David. And he's asking the Lord to deliver him out of thine hand. So that means Saul's hand. So at this point, he's still in Saul's hand. Even though he hasn't been killed by him, he wouldn't kill Saul, and he's escaped from Saul this time. He still is considered in the hand of Saul because he's an active enemy. Fast forward later down the road, Saul will find out again where David is hiding himself. It's called a hill of Hilkiah, which is for Jeshimon. And it's somewhere near the wilderness of Ziph, wherever that translates to. You can go check it out on your map later. But either way, Saul and his men, he's got 3,000 men with him coming after David. They go and they pitch their tent and they're sleeping. And the Lord causes a deep sleep to fall upon them, so that when David and his sidekick, Abishai, this is a nephew, are going with him, they crawl down into Saul's camp and they take a spear and a cruse of water and then crawl back out to announce to Saul that, you know, he was in their power a second time and he could have killed him. Abishai, his nephew, you know, said a phrase that the first guy said. He said, God delivered thine enemy into thy hands this day. Now let me smite him, I pray thee, with spear, even to the ground at once. I will not smite him a second time. He's saying, you know, he's here, he's asleep, let me just skewer him to the earth. And David says to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guilted? Same rationale. And David said, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. So he says, if he's going to die, it's not going to be with my hand. The Lord will kill him, or he'll die of natural old age, or in battle he'll die. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take now the spear that is at his bolster, the cruse of water, and let us go. And so you've got this second scene where he refused to kill him, and he puts the matter into the Lord's hand. All right. So those are times when this is not what the psalm is written about. The psalm saying that he was delivered from all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. So when is he delivered from the hand of Saul? Well, based on that last one, I would say that he was not delivered from the hand of Saul until death. And Saul didn't pass away until the Philistines killed him. Now, fast forward from when he stole the cruse of water and from behind Saul's while he was sleeping. Eventually, David realizes he can't continue to live in the wilderness. That Saul's going to catch up with him. He's going to kill him. So rather than living in the wilderness of Israel, he flees out of the country altogether and he goes down to the land of the Philistines. And he finds favor with one of the kings there. I think his name is Achish. And Achish dwells with him for a while. Then he winds up giving him a town. It's called Ziklag. Ziklag was a city that was originally in Israel. The Philistines reconquered it. And so he gave that to David, said, you know, here, you and your men and family, y'all live there. And David would go from there on raiding parties against the enemies of Israel. He'd kill everybody when he defeated a place. And he'd come back and he'd tell that king, you know, I've been attacking Israel, and because he didn't leave any survivors, no one was telling the other guy the truth. So this guy, the Philistine, thought that David was a loyal servant to him. So one day the Philistines decide it's time to invade Israel. We're going to battle against them. And David, and his army mount up, and they're going to go with the Philistines to fight against Israel. David obviously doesn't want to fight against them, but this is the part he's playing. And so the way the Lord delivers him out of this situation is that the other princes and kings of the Philistines don't trust David. They say, if we take this joker out to battle, and he was number two under Saul, if we take him with us, you know, he's going to get there and he's going to flip sides and turn against us. So just send him on home. And so the king, Achish, you know, begrudgingly says, David, sorry, you know, my fellow Philistines don't trust you. You're just going to have to go home. And so when he goes home, he and his men go back to that town they've been given, Ziklag. And when they get there, they discover that it had been raided while they're gone. So the Philistines had all gone off to war, and so their home was relatively undefended. And so the Amaleks, the descendants of Amalek, came and invaded while they were gone. And so they took everybody who was in Ziklag. So David's wives, his children, I don't think he had children yet. They weren't born until he was in Hebron. But the wives, everybody in the town who was left behind, they captured them all. They didn't kill any of them. And they burned the city, and they left. Well, David comes back to Ziklag, discovers the city is burning, and he is in a real bad spot. Because not only is his family and all of his men's families captured and gone, his men are so upset that they're ready to just kill him. They blame him. And so that's what we see here in 1 Samuel chapter 30. It says, David was greatly distressed for the people's sake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But what did David do? He encouraged himself in the Lord. He called the priest who was with him, Abiathar. He said, bring hither the ephod. And with that, David, you know, asked the Lord. He said, should I pursue after this troop, this group that came and conquered Ziklag and took all of our families? Should I overtake them? He asked the Lord permission. And he got an answer. The Lord said, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. Okay? So David does. So he's got 600 men with him at this time. That's his band. And they start hoofing it. And they're going south. And they make it as far as a brook called Besor. Looking on the little maps in the back of my Bible, that's about 25 miles from Ziklag. So they've come from wherever they were with the Philistine encampment back to Ziklag, and now they're continuing on south to Besor, another 20-something miles. And when they got there, there were a certain amount of the men, about a third of them, who were just too tired. They couldn't. It says 200 men abode behind, which were so faint they could not go over the brook Besor. David now has a troop of 400 that he's going to chase after this, you know, unknown invading force that can't capture all his family. On the way, they found an Egyptian servant who had been abandoned in the field. He had taken ill, and his master just left him. And so he had been several days without food and water. They gave him some food. He says, you know, can you lead us to the Amalek camp? And he says, I can, as long as you promise not to turn me over to my master or kill me. So they say, sure. You know, the Lord had told them to pursue, and you'll overtake them, and you'll recover all without fail. And so that's exactly what happened. So you jump down to verse 16. That servant brought them down to where the Amalek camp was, and there they were spread upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. So they were having a big old party, eating and drunk, and they were not ready to be attacked. They came upon them at twilight. That's the next verse. So they smote them from twilight until the evening of the next day. So twilight, I guess, would be right before dawn, I guess. And then maybe it's just at night. Sorry. I'll have to look up what that Hebrew word is. It's silly. Either way, they smote them a long time until there was no one left. The only folks who escaped were some guys who had some camels. There's about 400 of them, and they fled. And so in verse 18, it says, David recovered all that the Amaleks had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything they had taken to them. David recovered all. All right. They wound up going back to that brook where they left their 200 men. you know, some of the guys who had went with him were described as being wicked men, and they said, you know what, they didn't come with us, we shouldn't give them anything. You know, just give them their wives and children, they don't get any of the spoil, because they had conquered a, you know, great vast amount of spoil from what these guys had taken from the Philistines and out of the land of Judah, and that was in their possession, and they didn't want to share. And David said, ye shall not do so, my brethren. I may even have that. Hold up. Go. Ye shall not do so, my brethren, with that which the Lord hath given us, who hath preserved us and delivered the company that came against us into our hand. And so David's given credit to God that he's preserved us in the battle. He's delivered, you know, this great host that they fought against and all these spoils. You shouldn't be so grudgingly about it. And so he created a statute that day that those who stay with the stuff, you know, in battle get the same portion of spoil as those who go on to fight. So in this day, you've had right now David delivered from his internal enemies with his own people wanting to kill him, stone him for losing their wives. He's now been delivered against his external enemies, the Amalekites, who, you know, had taken his stuff and were desiring to harm him, obviously. And then the final thing that we said, you know, he sang this song in the day that the Lord delivered him from all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. At the same time, you remember the Philistines had gone to go fight against Israel, that David wasn't permitted to. Well, the battle went really crappy for Saul. It was just as bad as you can imagine. And so his sons were killed. There's three of them mentioned that were already killed. And then the archers shot Saul with an arrow, several arrows. The archers hit him, and he was sore wounded of the archers. And then Saul said, you know, to his armor bearer, the guy who carries his stuff, he said, draw your sword, thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised Philistines come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he likewise fell upon his sword and died therewith. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. So in this great, all these things happened in a very short interval of time. You know, the deliverance from Saul, David being stoned by his own men, the deliverance from the enemies who had taken all their wives and children, and now an ultimate deliverance from Saul, who had continued to pursue him all the days that he had been. Ooh, that one has one come in. Maybe. Yep. All right, so what are we looking at is, there's David just joined us. We're looking at the title in Psalm 18 of these are the words he spake when the Lord delivered him from the hand of his enemies and from the hand of Saul. Is that my best understanding is that this psalm is in response to the deliverance on the day that Saul was killed by the Philistines and David was delivered from the hand of his own men as well as his enemies who had conquered Ziklag. So why do we go through all that? It's because I think it's important to try and find the right context in which something was written. All right. One other nugget for you is that this psalm is almost word for word found in another portion of Scripture. If you go over to 2 Samuel chapter 22, you will see that with the exception of the first verse of Psalm 18, it says, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. That verse 1 here is going to be starting from the title. This is the title in Psalm 18. And then you're missing verse 1, but it jumps straight into verse 2. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and deliverer. It goes all the way down to the end. Pretty much word for word. There's some slightly, just slight variations, but you've got the whole thing repeated. So if you're reading Psalm, if you've read that before, when you get to Psalm 18, you'll go, this sounds awful familiar. It is. That's what you're reading the second time. All right. So all that being said, let's jump into it. All right. So David starts off, I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. Okay. So he's got two different things he says here in verse 1 and verse 3 that he will do. I will love thee. And verse 3 says, I will call upon thee. So I want you to, as we go through this, consider what David's doing And then what is he describing God as? I will love thee, O Lord, my strength. So the Lord is the strength. The Lord is my strength. Verse 2, the Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I trust, my buckler, the horn of my salvation, and my high tower. Okay. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy. He's worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. Okay, so these three verses, you have David acknowledging that his deliverance is going to come from God. At this time, if you were going to defend your home, you needed to have a strong city, you needed to have walls, you needed to have a keep inside where if your walls were breached, you were able to fall back. You needed to have a solid foundation. You needed to have strength. You needed to have shields, horns to call in reinforcements. You know, your high towers where you flee into. All of these different pieces that he's describing here as the Lord is that he's not trusting in human inventions. The best that you've got, the best fortress you have, the highest tower you can build, the strongest shield, the loudest horn, the strongest you are on your day. Trusting in anyone else to deliver you, it's all going to fall far, far short of what the Lord himself can do. That he's the one, ultimately, that regardless of what you put your hopes in, he's the one who's able to. And so he is loving the Lord because of the Lord's faithfulness and because of his strength. That he is the rock. He is a stable place, unchanging. You know, you serve an unchanging God. That's what the word immutable means, right? Unchanging. He is the fortress, that's the strong defense where you can flee into in a time of trouble. My deliverer, you know, we're not depending on another nation coming and saving our skins here or someone else coming. You're depending on God himself. He's my strength and whom I trust. I will trust. Okay, I love thee and I will trust and I will call. My buckler and the horn. So a buckler is a shield. So when you've got the arrows and stones being rained down on your head, are you depending on your own physical shield or are you depending on the shield of God? The horn of my salvation, your horns, you call in reinforcements with horns, right? And then my high tower, that's the place where it all else fails. Your walls have been busted down. That's the last resort of you go to your high tower and you basically hope your enemies will go away. That everything that you could depend on in this world, the Lord already is and he's better. All right. So then we're going to get some context of why is he thinking about all this. He says, verse 4, the sorrows of death compassed me. The floods of ungodly men made me afraid. So he's going to describe what's been going on with him. He said, the sorrows of death compassed me. It's like death was all around him, even his own death. The floods of ungodly men made me afraid. So he is surrounded by ungodly men, which sounds a lot like living among the Philistines, right? The sorrows of hell compassed me about. This hell is Sheol, which is another, could better be translated as grave, as opposed to the hell that we think of, a place of eternal torment. The sorrows of the grave compassed me about. The snares of death prevented me. So he's got all these things that are it's just like he's just about to fall into the grave. There's so many things, it's so close. He's in great distress. So what does he do in this? In my distress, I called upon the Lord. So he cries out, he prays to the Lord. And you can see him doing that when he, had Arbioth the priest bring the ephod, and he calls unto the Lord, asking, what should we do? And so I cried unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple in heaven. My cry came before him, even unto his ears. And then you've got this wonderful imagery of how dramatic it is when the Lord intervenes. And so in the scenes that we just talked about that day, we don't see any of this literally occurring, but yet in the same time, he was delivered. He was delivered from all those things, and it was by the Lord's hand. And so you've got this imagery painting trying to express the magnitude of the Lord's power. So my cry came before him, even unto his ears. All right. Then the earth shook and trembled. Imagine great earthquakes. The foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken because of his wrath, which is anger. There went up smoke out of his nostrils and fire out of his mouth. Devoured coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also and came down. The darkness was under his feet. He rode upon a cherub. Remember on the Ark of the Covenant, there were two cherubs who were put upon the mercy seat facing each other. Cherubs were also put at the entrance to the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve were kicked out, along with a flaming sword to make sure they didn't come back. And so there's some celestial being. I don't know exactly what they look like. He rode upon a cherub and did fly. Yea, he did fly upon the wings of the wind. So you can imagine this imagery of a storm rolling in. He made darkness his secret place, his pavilion round about him, were dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. And you get this more storm imagery of it blowing in with strong winds and waters and thick clouds in the sky. At the brightness that was before him, his thick clouds passed, hailstones and coals of fire. Sometimes the Lord literally would rain down hailstones upon the enemies of Israel to the point where they could be fighting a battle, and more of the enemies would die of hailstones than of, the sword. So you'd have these hailstones and then raining down coals of fire. So your fire and brimstone imagery, what rained down on Sodom and Gomorrah when brought down judgment. And that's the imagery that we're seeing here, the power to just wipe out people. He sent out his arrows and scattered them, and he shot out lightning and discomforted him. So you've got, again, the lightning imagery of the storm. But notice that arrows and lightning are not the same thing. So the Lord's ability to shoot out an arrow, some way of causing his judgment to be rendered is something that's beyond just lightning. Then the channels of water were seen, and the foundations of the world were discovered at thy rebuke, O Lord, at the blast of the breath of thy nostril. Okay. The channels of the water were seen, and the foundation of the world were discovered at thy rebuke. So this imagery reminds me of the language describing the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea. It said that the Lord, by a strong wind, blasted, a channel through the Red Sea and held it open all night while they passed through. And so in this, you've got the foundation of the world. You've got the dry ground being, discovered in the blast of his wind. He sent from above and he took me and drew me out of the many waters. So if you imagine that you're in the scene where you're just about to drown, and he's come in and he's blasted out with his nostrils to give you dry ground. He's given a deliverance, a path of escape. He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. So he had more than he could physically do, and he needed a deliverance. He came. He delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me. They prevented me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. They tried to hinder him, but the Lord was the one who held them up. He brought me forth into a large place. Often when you see the word salvation or deliverance, it's talking about a way of escape, that you're being brought out of a narrow place into a large place where you are not trapped. He delivered me. Why? Because he delighted in me. The Lord rewardeth me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands hath he recompensed me. He's showing favor to David, who was described as being a man after his own heart, that his heart was seeking the way of the Lord. He made some pretty notable mistakes along the way. But for the most part, he was seeking to do the Lord's will, which you see when he would ask the Lord before he just started taking off after the Amaleks. Right? I have kept the ways of the Lord and have not wickedly departed from my God. For all his judgments were before me, and I did not put away his statutes from me. So that's referring to the law, the Old Testament. All that was written at the time David was living, he was conscious of it and trying to serve and abide by it. I was also upright before him. I kept myself from mine iniquity. Therefore hath the Lord recompensed me according to righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands in his eyesight. With the merciful thou wilt show thyself merciful. With an upright man thou wilt show thyself upright. With the pure thou wilt show thyself pure. With the froward, thou wilt show thyself froward. right? So froward are those who are arrogant, perverse, those who are wicked. And so he is saying that those who are acting in a perverse manner, they will have tribulation rained on them. For thou wilt save the afflicted people and will bring down the high looks. And you'll see, if you read your scripture cover to cover, the theme about the Lord humbling the proud and saving the distressed and afflicted, that's throughout there. If you go read the Sermon on the Mount, the blessed bees, go check out those that are blessed. It's not the ones who are got it all figured out and they're doing great, but those are the ones that are mourning, those who are peacemakers, those that are, you know, not strong in this world, certainly not full of pride and lifted up. Verse 28, thou wilt light my candle, the Lord my God will enlighten my darkness. Got good admonitions not to lean on our own understanding. We need the Lord's wisdom and guidance to show us the way in his providence, that he has to be our light. We can't depend on our own self. We're just walking in darkness unless he provides us with the light. For by thee I have run through a troop, and by my God have I leaped over a wall. And so with the Lord's providential care here, he was able to overcome this troop that had captured all the town of Ziklag. You know, that expression of leaping over a wall, this was an obstacle that it was not passable on his own power, but the Lord gave him what he needed. He opened the way. As for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried, which means tested, approved. He is a buckler, a shield to all those that trust in him. For who is God save the Lord? Or who is a rock save our God? So that's the answer to the question of before, you know, what when the Lord is my rock, the Lord is my deliverer, and my God, that he's not putting his trust in anything else, you know, who's better? And the answer is no one. It's God that girdeth me with strength and maketh my way perfect. He maketh my feet like hinds' feet, and setteth me upon high places. So he gives you stability, even in difficult perches. He sets you up in high places out of your enemy's reaches. He teacheth my hands to war so that a bow of steel is broken by mine arms. You know, so this ability to do things that you can't do in your own power. He has also given me the shield of thy salvation, and thy right hand hath holden me up. Thy gentleness hath made me great. Thou hast enlarged my steps unto me, that my feet did not slip. This is an interesting image to me. There's a lot of imagery in this as we're trying to convey the power of God and how he impacts, you know, our lives when we're trusting him. If you've ever gone down a staircase where the stairs are just too narrow, you know, you want to have at least, you know, 12 inches something for your foot to fit on. But if you've ever done it where it's like 6 inches or 7 and like your toes hang off or half of your foot hangs off, then, you know, it feels very unstable. You just feel like you're just about to tumble down on your head at any point. And so you get this image of how it's enlarged my steps under me. So you imagine the ease of coming down those broad steps that you don't slip, that you're not about to constantly lose your footing. I pursued my enemies and overtaken them. That imagery of going after Amalek. Neither did I turn again until they were consumed. They fought from twilight until the next evening, until they were all consumed, except for those 400 that ran away. I have wounded them, they are not able to rise, they are fallen under my feet. For thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle, thou hast subdued unto me those that rose up against me. And they really did need, above natural strength to be able to do that. Because at the 20-mile marker in their race, you know, a third of them had dropped out. But the rest continued on and found them and then fought for a long time. So it required the Lord sustaining them. Thou hast also given me the necks of mine enemies. That's an imagery going back to the way that they would show that they conquered somebody, is that you would put your foot on the neck of the leader, that the defeated foes, that I might destroy them that hate me. They cried, and there's none to save them, even unto the Lord, but he answered them not. Why? Because he's not hearing the cries of the unrighteous, those who only cry out in their distress, but they don't genuinely have any desire to serve the Lord. Then I did beat them small as dust before the wind. So imagine taking like a brick and pounding it with a sledgehammer until it's just dust and it can blow away. That's your image of what's going on to his enemies. I did cast them out as dirt in the streets. it's like sweeping up those dust and your brewing pan and dousing it out into the road. Thou hast delivered me from the strivings of the people and hast made me the head of the heathen. Deliver me from the strivings of the people. You got that shown when his own people were ready to kill him. That will also show up again later in David's life when he becomes king first of Judah, just that tribe, and the rest follows Saul's son, Ishbosheth, I think is his name. And eventually he'll be the king over all of them, but it'll take 7 years. Thou hast made me head of the heathen. And during that period, David's reign will expand out and he'll have a lot of battles. And the people beyond him, all the heathen, the Gentiles, the non-Israelites, a great majority of them will fall subject unto his rule. A people I have not known shall serve me. As soon as they hear of me, they shall obey me. The strangers shall submit themselves unto me. So you've got that. This is forward-looking language. As soon as they hear of me, they shall obey me. The strangers shall submit themselves unto me. So this is something that's going to happen down the road, and it does. The strangers shall fade away and shall be afraid out of their close places. The Lord liveth, and blessed be my rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. We have a hymn that has this in the chorus, and I love it. But the Lord liveth, blessed be my rock, and let the God of my salvation be exalted. Y'all, we serve a living God. We don't serve one that's dead or removed or no longer active, but he's alive and he's living and his son is living. He is our stable rock and he's the God of our salvation. He did it all. You know, Jesus, Matthew 1:21, it says, she shall bring forth a son and his name, they shall call him Jesus and he shall save his people. It was God, it's all God. Let the God of my salvation, my deliverance be exalted. And to exalt someone is to lift them up high, to count them as worthy of glory and honor and majesty. Now, you and I can't give any glory to God. We can't give him any majesty. He's already owns it all. But we can recognize it. We can acknowledge it in our own life. We can recognize that he is worthy of that and treat him as such, not treat him like sometimes we do, as if he's just a magic genie that we go to and we're having a rough time and we really like him to relieve it, rather than he's the God of all universe and he continues to care for me every day, whether I think about it or not. And he is worthy of my time and attention and worship, praise. It is God that avengeth me and subdueth the people under me. And so in all this, David's giving all the credit to God, which is where it belongs. If you're anything like me, when something goes right, you tend to take credit for yourself. Man, look what I did. But the truth is, no matter what it is, we need to be giving the glory to God. Anything that I do right, it's only by God's grace. Anything that I do wrong, I take full and 100% responsibility of that because it's my own sins. And God did not cause me to have those sins. That was all on me. All right. He delivereth me from my enemy. Yea, thou liftest me up above those that rise up against me. Thou hast delivered me from the violent man. Get this. What comes into my head is like the imagery of you're fighting along the cliffside and you're on a level plain with your enemy, and then God lifts you up and he puts you up on a higher cliff where that guy just can't get you anymore. He's delivered him out from this violent man. Therefore will I sing thanks unto thee, O Lord, among the heathen, and sing praises unto thy name. We don't need to be shy or reticent about praising God, regardless of who we're around, whether it's fellow believers or whether it's anybody, you know, the heathen here, non-believers, and sing praises unto thy name. So if y'all are going to church and they've got, you know, song service, be singing. It's it's good for you, and it's God's worthy of it. For what the great things he does for us every day. Great deliverance giveth he to his king, and showeth mercy to his anointed, to David, and to his seed forevermore. So we've gone back to before David fought Goliath. He was anointed to be the king, the future king of Israel. Saul was still king at this point, and Samuel did it in secret, but he was anointed by God to be the king of Israel, and all this time had passed, but he had not yet been the king. And so he would go through this period where it's just like, God, you've anointed me to be the king, And yet I'm living out here in a cave or fleeing in the wilderness or living with the Philistines among all these heathen. Lord, I need you. I need you to deliver me and ultimately fulfill your promise, because he couldn't do it on his own. That's exactly what the Lord did in his own timing. He brought David to the spot where he wanted him, where he would be king first of Judah and later over all Israel. And he would reign for 33 years over all the tribes. And the Lord blessed him in all that he did. But so you've got this Psalm 18 that is really a psalm of thanksgiving. It's acknowledging what great things God had done for David, and some beautiful imagery as we try to think about how powerful God is and how he can move in situations in ways we just can't. There are things beyond our control, but they're not too hard for him. You know, the Bible uses the expression, is my arm grown short? As in, is there something that's out of God's reach? And the answer is no. It may not please him to do it, and we have to be okay with that. You know, whatever we're praying, we need to be praying that the Lord's will would be done, and that when it's done, we'd be submissive to it, rather than angry at the creator of the universe for not giving me my way. You know, he is not a genie beholden unto us. He is the almighty creator, sovereign God. Sovereign means he gets his way. And so we need to be praying that we would be seeking the things that please him, and trying to serve him in all that we do. And then when he does answer our prayers and delivers us out of trouble, we need to be turning back to give him the praise and the thanks and the recognition, rather than just moving on to the next problem. I think Jesus at one time healed, 10 lepers, but only one stopped and turned and gave praise. And it wasn't even an Israelite, it was a Samaritan. And the Samaritans to the Israelites were like dogs. They were a mixed breed, who kind of worshiped God a little bit, but really they had their idolatry all mixed in. And these are the people who were planted into the nation of Israel after the northern kingdom was conquered by Assyria. And so they've been there for several hundred years, serving God just enough so that he wouldn't send lions to kill them anymore. That was when they first got there. They just started worshiping their own idols, and God sent lions to wipe them out until the king of Assyria sent like one priest back to teach him how to serve God, so the affliction would stop. And so hundreds of years down the road, you've got this mutations of these people who didn't even know really what they served. That's what Jesus would describe when he's talking to the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. He says, we know you don't even know what you serve. And so all that being said is that of the 10 who were healed, the one who stopped and gave praise to God for the healing was the Samaritan. And so it's a good reminder to you and to me to take time each day to thank the Lord for what he's done. And when we are in great distress and affliction, not be so quick just to look to our own intellect or resources or whatever as the absolute answer, but recognizing that, the only true deliverance we're going to have is going to come from him. And when it does come, in whatever form that comes, whether it's the one that we would have preferred or not, to recognize that God is worthy of the praise and the glory and the thanks. So Psalm 18.